Welcome to Nachyomi of the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Esther Schupp, and today we'll continue our study of Iyov, focusing on the second chapter. In the first chapter, we learned how disaster befell Iyov in stages, alternating between raids by human malice and destruction by blind natural forces. His oxen and donkeys were stolen, and the servants who drove these beasts of burden were killed. A fire from heaven, a celestial rain of comets, or perhaps a volcanic eruption, wipes out his flocks of sheep and the shepherds. Then, in an attack by Chaldeans, his camels are taken and their keepers murdered. Finally, a windstorm destroys the house where his sons and daughters were feasting, killing all the inhabitants. Iyov lost his possessions and his children. But he did not rail against God and consoled himself with the thought that neither his family or fortune were inherently his. He came naked and empty-handed into this world and will probably leave it empty-handed, leaving nothing behind. Vayomer Arom yatzati mi beteni mi, ve'arom ashuv shama, Hashem natan ve'Hashem lakach, yihi shem Hashem mevorach. Chapter 2 opens again with a scene in the divine court. As the Satan comes to report his scan of humanity upon earth, but is chastised by Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Satan, Hasamta libcha el avdi Iyov, ki ein kamohu ba'aretz, ish tam v'yashar, yireh Elokim v'sar mera, ועודנו מחזיק בתומתו, ותסיתנו בו לבלעו חינם. Hashem's words affirm that Iyov did not deserve the onslaught of disasters and the pain and grief that he is bearing. Furthermore, Hashem attests that Iyov has maintained his innocence, stressing, ועודנו מחזיק בתומתו, and he's still holding on to his innocence. Malbim explains that Iyov understood that his possessions and his children are independent of his body and his soul. It was not his virtue that brought them, and it was not his sins that took him away. Hashem gave them to him as a gift, and therefore he cannot complain if Hashem took them away. Nonetheless, Hashem's own words raise some troubling questions about divine justice, about Hashem's omniscience, about reward and punishment, all of which will be discussed in the forthcoming chapters. In the interim, Hashem's words leave an opening for the Satan, who exclaims sardonically, Or bad or, v'chol asher la'ish yiten bead nafsho, ulam shlachna yadcha v'ga el atzmo v'el psaro, Im lo el panecha yevarechecha. Skin for skin. A man will give up all he owns in exchange for his life. Should you stretch out your hand and strike his bones and flesh, he will surely bless you to your face. The phrase or be'ad or is glaring and may be the source of the English idiom having skin in the game. Simply put, it suggests that Iyov was willing to give up fortune and family to save his own skin. Rashi explains the source of this idiom. He suggests that when a sharp blade comes swinging at one's neck, in the blink of an eye, the arm will rise instantly, defensively, and unthinkingly, a person will sacrifice one limb, his arm, to save his life. Accordingly, Iyov's apparent righteousness is nothing more than self-preservation. Ramban offers a more blatant comment. A person will sacrifice his own son or daughter to save his own neck. Are we naturally selfish? Is our piety and virtuous behavior nothing more than self-serving shams? Don't we have multiple examples of parents who gave up their lives to save their children? Moreover, we've seen people risking their health and their lives to save strangers. We've read of people withstanding anguish and brutality to keep their comrades and neighbors safe. Isn't our history replete with martyrs who gave up their lives under extreme torture, refusing to renounce their faith? The Satan cynicism is not unlike the explanations of evolutionary biologists who dismiss love and parental devotion as mythologized adaptations of hormonal and chemical responses designed to preserve the species. Nonetheless, Hashem allows the Satan to further test Iyov on condition that he does not kill him. Vayomer Hashem el Satan, Hino biyadecha, ach et nafsho shmor. Vayetze ha-satan me'et pnei Hashem, vayach et Iyov bishchin ra, mikaf raglo, ve'at kodkodo. So the Satan left quickly and struck Iyov with shchin from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. Rashi quotes our sages in Baba Vatra, who said that the Satan was given a harder task than Iyov, as if he was told to break the barrel but preserve the wine. So Iyov was struck with painful boils, shchin, all over his body, an incurable disease that caused incessant itching and burning. And while still mourning the death of his children, he is denigrated to scratching and wallowing in ashes in search of some relief. His wife, who has lost her children as well, and who is stricken with grief and shock, sees him contorted in physical pain. And in her despair tells him, Otcha machzik betumatecha, barech Elokim vamut. Neither she nor her husband are aware that she has echoed the words of Hashem and of the Satan. Hashem pointed out that even after losing all that he cherished, Iyov holds firmly to his innocence. And the Satan countered that as soon as Iyov himself, his body and soul, would be afflicted, he would bless God. The Satan uses the word bless euphemistically, not daring to say what he really means, namely that Iyov would blaspheme and curse the God he had hitherto worshipped. Does his wife suggest that he blaspheme God and as a result be struck by the offended deity and die? How can she be so certain that by cursing he would find release from pain? Is his death preferable to suffering? Ramban addresses these questions and says, just as reward for obedient and moral behavior is not instantaneous, so punishment and death for immoral and blasphemous behavior is not immediate. What then could Iyov's wife have meant? The Ramban answers that Iyov's wife thought that her husband's silent acceptance of his fate was a naive attempt to preserve his own life. She had all along served God, believing that doing so would yield reward and ensure that her family and fortune would be safe. In the wake of their calamity, she had concluded that there was neither reward nor punishment, just blind fate. And therefore, death was preferable to an absurd life. In response, Iyov says, Kedaber achat hanevalot tedaberi. Gam et hatov nekabel me'et ha'elokim, ve'et hara lo nekabel? Bechol zot lo chata Iyov bisfatav. You speak like one of the vile, immoral women speak. Should we receive the good from God and not receive the bad? In all this, Iyov would not sin with his lips. While Rashi believes that Iyov initially served Hashem out of fear, Ramban interprets this statement as Iyov's declaration that he had and continues to serve Hashem out of love, expecting neither reward and deeming the good that he was bestowed on them to be undeserved, as was the disaster that struck them. Malbim points out that in the first chapter, Iyov accepted the loss of his children and fortune and added, Yehi Shem Hashem Mevorach. But now, writhing in agony, he could suffer in silence and not sin with his lips, but in his heart, he was no longer the same man. Malbim says he thought that any good that is to be found in this reality is mixed and overtaken by evil. It turns out that God had created man for a life of misery and suffering. Eov admonishes his wife, who speaks like Echat HaNevalot. Rabbi Moshe Kimchi, Radak's brother, points out that Mishle suggests that Naval is a fool who won't guard his tongue. A wise person would not risk arousing the anger of a capricious God. Given that man is powerless against fate, it is best to keep quiet. Accordingly, Eov is warning his wife not to speak or act impulsively, foolishly. Tehillim, on the other hand, defines a Naval as Amar Naval Bilibo Ein Elokim. The Naval denies that there is a God who watches and cares what people do. The state of the world indicates that wicked people get away with murder, and innocent people are too often victimized, leading some to conclude that there is no justice and there is no judge. Leit din veleit dayan. Accordingly, some commentators read Eov's wife's words as bitterly ironic. In essence, she was telling him, "You're holding on to your righteousness, but our experience has shown that there is no judge and no justice. You can curse and blaspheme, and if God hears, he'll strike you dead, and you've lost nothing, for we've already lost everything." In essence, she was prodding her husband to test if there is Hashgacha Pratit. Rabbi Yosef Kimchi, Radak's father, takes a completely different approach. He reads no irony in the words of Eov's wife, and suggests instead that she's prodding him to open his mouth, not in blasphemy, but in prayer. "Bless God, as you did when we lost our children, and beg him to spare you the agony and humiliation, lest in the end you will speak inappropriately when you no longer can tolerate the pain." And despite her fears that Eov might break, the narrator assures us, "Bechol zot lo chata bisfatav." The Greek translation, Targum HaShivim, provides a more sympathetic interpretation of Eov's wife that accounts for her agony. It adds that she said, "How long will you await your salvation? All vestige of your existence has already been eradicated. The sons and daughters that I painfully bore and struggled to raise are gone, and you are wallowing in stinking rot, and I wander from place to place looking for food as I wait for the sun to set so I can finally find some peace from my toil and anguish." Her thoughts and feelings are then obscured, and this chapter ends with the arrival of Eov's friends, who are shocked at his appearance. Seeing him, they rend their garments and finally sit with him silently until the end of Shiva. Thank you for learning with me. Thank you for studying together Le'ilui Nishmat Rose Foreman, Razel Rochel Bat Arye Leib, and for Rachel Zeitlin, Rochel Bat Shlomo, Alehen HaShalom.